You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, here's an interview I've been waiting for quite a while to hunker down into. Mike Warnke became one of evangelical Christianity's best-known experts in the subject of Satanism. And then some investigative journalism kind of stuck their nose into his business, and there was a kind of a kerfuffle. I'm not sure whether that's a real word. That might be Yiddish or something. Anyway, today, I'm sure, Mike is a speaker, teacher, father, grandfather, husband, weird, radical, fun-loving, yet deadly serious minister who still delivers powerful messages to enlighten others to the eternal love of Jesus Christ. He has submitted to the authority of an assembly of ministers in this whole kerfuffle. And for those of you who are unaware of the kerfuffle, we will talk about the kerfuffle. Now it sounds like I'm selling donuts. Anyway, MikeWarnke.org is the website, and he joins us live right now. Good to have you, Mike.
I'd like it jelly-filled kerfuffle.
Jelly-filled kerfuffle.
Yeah, or the maple bar kerfuffle. I love that word, kerfuffle.
Where did it come from? Do you know the root?
I don't know. First time I ever heard it, I was at the gathering place in Slave Lake up in northern Alberta.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the ladies that works there was talking, you know, and she had that great sort of, it was actually sort of a Minnesotan kind of accent, you
right,
know?
Right.
She's kind of talking like that, and yeah. She said, oh, yeah, there's this big kerfuffle. And I went, really?
Excuse me?
Yeah, what do you take for that?
Oh, man. Well, good to have you on the show today. What the heck are you doing? Are you still doing the exact same shtick you were doing 30 years ago?
Well, you know, somebody asked Susan, my wife, said, after all of this, is he still funny? And she said, well, you don't understand. He really doesn't have a choice with that. It's the ramblings of a depraved mind.
Yes.
But when we went through the kerfuffle, I love that. When we went through the kerfuffle, it really made me sit down and really take stock of what was going on and how things had gone and, you know, the hiccups in my life, large hiccups, and trying to just figure out what I really needed to do to get things snapped back into order. I'd often say to people, you know, we weren't really guilty of what we were accused of, but we were guilty of so much that I'm just glad those people didn't talk to the right folk. And so we, you know, there's nothing like, you know, just slamming into the ground face down that will really get you to really reassess things. And, you know, the Bible says if you're building on the rock, when the storm comes, it'll stand. But if you're building on the sand, when the storm comes, it'll fall. And, you know, it only took a couple of months for everything that I had been building, and I emphasize the I had been building thing, to really come down around my ears. So it's pretty obvious, you know, where I was building. So, you know, I came to a point where I said, okay, God, what do you want me to do? And the Lord says, well, you know, I want you to do the job I gave you. Now that all of the trash is out of the way, maybe you can do that. And so, with the help of these ministers that we have as the board of directors and as our spiritual oversight, we began to rebuild again. Only this time we rebuilt in a way that we believe that the Lord wanted us to rebuild. It was not about numbers. It was about relationship. It wasn't so much about the comedy as it was about preaching the gospel. P.S. I'm funny. You know, I had been called to preach the gospel. P.S. I'm funny, but I had gotten into the place where I spent all my time concentrating on my career, which was the funny part, and I forgot about my calling, which was preach the gospel. And so I had to get, you know, I had to get things back in order. And in doing that, it's been a very long process. And of course, we've never come back to the prominence that we had before as far as entertainment is concerned. But I would say that my ministry is probably more impacting now than it ever has been. And we travel all over the world. We do lots and lots in Alberta and Northwest Territory and over in the Maritimes. We've had, you know, just a lot of success in building relationships. And the ministry basically exists, you know, in that context. You know, we minister with people. We have relationships. We've brought it back into the church, which I feel is what evangelists. They're supposed to be help building the local church, not just evangelistic associations. So, you know, it's been all of that. Plus, I'm still allowed to be funny because, you know, that's just one of the my particular talent that God gave me.
You must have had a tough time charting the waters back in the day when funny wasn't really encouraged in the Jesus scene.
Oh, baby, it was grim in the beginning.
Even now, let me just tell you, Mike, I remember my first year doing this show, I opened up the phone lines and said, want to hear your best joke, you know, just your best joke. Worst half hour of radio in the history of radio.
Yeah?
Oh, my goodness. It was disturbing. So you, back in the day, way to go, man. I mean, you talk about smacking your head up against a wall. It'd be like you and Larry Norman charting the same kind of waters.
Well, it was, you know, and it was funny because Larry and the contemporary guys, well, you know, Chuck Girard and Honeytree and all of those guys that were, you know, pioneering Jesus music, they were always defending me, and I would go on shows and always defend, you know, Christian rock. Because, you know, people were saying that, you know, the music was intrinsically evil. And, you know, Honeytree made a comment one time. She says, there's no such thing as evil music. She said, music is a common grace given to us by a loving God who wanted us to have joy in our lives. But there are evil musicians who take that and pervert that. And so, like everything else, it is a reflection of the people that do it. So a Leon Patello can be with Santana and do one thing, but once he gets saved, he can come out and use the same music to do something else. And it's the same thing with comedy. You know, if we're using comedy, you know, as a means to an end, you know, to break down barriers, to calm people's spirits, to make friends with a room full of strangers in the quickest possible way, so at the end of it we can start talking about some very serious matters, then comedy gets to be, you know, a very useful tool for spreading the gospel.
I have a comic on my show once a month. Her name is Carrie Pomeroli. Tremendous,
yeah.
Tremendous girl. And I remember, what is it, last April 1st, we had about 5 or 6 comedians in a row. And boy, that was just, it was so good to just lighten up. I mean, it's a shame you still have to educate the Jesus scene to lighten up, though.
Well, yeah, it is. And people, I've often said that Christians take themselves way too seriously.
Yeah.
And they don't take the Lord seriously enough. Because, you know, it's all about making relationships. It's all about, you know, us enjoying the blessings that God has given us. And one of the things that God's given us that's unique to human beings is we're the only ones that get a joke. There's no other part of his creation that gets a joke.
I know.
God gave
us
that.
Growing up, I had a dog. I used to set his tail on fire. He never thought it was funny.
Yeah. I doused a cat with gas, set him on fire, he'd run around and around and around and around, around, around and just fall over. My mom said, did you kill that dog? A cat? I go, no, he's just out of gas.
Oh, I see. That's bad. That's bad.
I'm sorry.
Listen,
anyway,
let's go way back, shall we? Shall we go way
sure.
back?
Anywhere you want to go, Bubba.
Mike Warnke, let's go back to the Warnke truck stop.
Yeah.
Was that a tough place growing up?
Very tough. Anytime you grew up with alcoholics, it is a very, very tough place to be.
Yeah, you did not exactly grow up in the most functional of families.
No, not at all. Actually, my mother died when I was 8, my dad passed away when I was 11, and then I went to be with foster family, and they were actually relatives as well, and they were probably much more functional than my original family. And
was that when you moved over to Crestline?
That's it. That's when I went and lived with the Schraders and lived in Crestline. And
I spent about a year up in that neck of the woods. I worked at a place called Camp Owongo, believe
yeah.
it or not.
Yeah.
You know that camp?
I do. I know exactly where it's at. That's very weird. What were you doing up there, bro?
Well, I was originally involved with Hume Lake Christian Camps over in, you know,
okay.
You know where that area is, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they didn't have any room for me. There was no room at the inn, so I went to this other camp, and inevitably I went back to Hume Lake. But, yeah, I spent a fair bit of time up in San Bernardino area, and I remember those Santa Ana winds coming over and drying my nostrils out until I got a nosebleed, and now they're setting the whole country on fire, it seems like.
Yeah, that's where we are. I'm speaking to you from the middle of the fires right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was on my way to Rancho Mirage 2 days ago to preach, And actually, my wife and I actually got about halfway, and we turned around and came back. And my wife stayed with the people that we are staying with, just in case they had to evacuate. Everybody had me go on out and do the service, and then I came right back. But yeah, it's been pretty grim, but it looks like everybody's getting a handle on things now, so that's good.
We went through some serious fires when I was living in Australia. I think it was December 2001. We lived up in the mountains, and of course the mountains caught on fire. We could not, I mean, every Christmas you go down to the beach. That's kind of what you do in Australia. The highways and the roads, everything was blocked. We were trapped, man. It was like the fire was blocks from our house, and big old choppers flying over, soaking our lawn. It was great. They watered our lawn for us. That was kind of very nice of them to do that, but It's a scary scene. You have no, as soon as that wind changes, you're at the mercy of it.
Well, it's very, very scary because there's nothing you can do. It's like you say, you're at the mercy. There's nothing that you can do. The fire just comes on. Every once in a while, I think nature just flexes its muscles to make us realize that we're not all that in a bag of chips, you know?
Yeah, that's right. So that's right. Well, let's go back to that Crestline scenario, Rim of the World High.
Yes, sir.
What kind of a high school kid were you?
Oh, I was the one that was behind the scenes with everything. I joked with everybody. You know, I had a lot of sadness early on in my life, and I realized that, you know, if you could make people laugh, they'd like you. And so that's what I did. You know, I wasn't particularly athletic, and I wasn't particularly tall, dark, and handsome. So my way of making friends and getting along was to make everybody laugh, and so that's what I did. Plus, I really liked politics, so I was constantly somebody's campaign manager when they were running for different offices in student government. I did that throughout the whole time I was in school. And we just had our 40th class reunion a couple years back, and I went, and all of my old buddies were, boy, I tell you, you ran those campaigns, and we did this and that, and you were right there behind us, and it was very cool. So
that's very good.
I had a good time in high school, really.
I can imagine that Philippians 3 would be a pretty decent chapter in your life, the whole forgetting your past, moving on, let's press on forward towards the goal, and That kind of stuff. You know, that might be your epitaph.
Well, you know, it is one of those things that, you know, I look in the Word for the power that I need to do the things that God's calling me to do now. And that is one of my scriptures. The other one is Romans 8:38 and 39, nothing can separate you from the love of God. Another scripture that's very important to me is the gifts and callings of God are without repentance. And because when I went through what I went through, you know, it was pretty much, you know, Lord, look, I know I'm done, and, you know, I'm not saying I'm not going to serve you, because I'm smart enough to know that, excuse me, I'm smart enough to know that, you know, mowing grass at church is serving the Lord, but I just know that I'm done with this. And, you know, to my surprise, the Lord said, well, you know, you're not done with this. And so I really had to dig into the Word and find those scriptures that could become life scriptures to me, stuff that had to, you know, that actually became logos to me.
Mike, how did you separate the, like you just said, the Lord said, no, you're not done with this. How do you know it was Him that was really saying, hey, keep going, and not just your own ego saying, keep going? You know, we can justify and rationalize everything.
Oh, baby. Well, you know, I heard the Lord say that, and then I went to the guys that were, you know, being my spiritual oversight, and I said, I think this is what I've heard from the Lord. What do you guys think? You know,
good for you. That's a wise way to say it, man. That's good. Yep.
Yeah, and then they went off and prayed about it and came back and said, yeah, we agree. However, if you're going to go ahead with it, this is how you're going to go ahead with it, and that's what it is to. That's what it means to submit yourself to authority. And when I did my submission to authority, I did it in writing, so I could never weasel out afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
And I said that, you know, I was going to do whatever these guys told me to do, and they said, well, you know, we believe that the Lord wants you to go ahead too. However, we believe that these are the conditions under which that's going to happen. And so I submitted myself to that authority, and those are the conditions that I went ahead under. So it was very... I used to think that having somebody to submit to was the scariest possible thing that you could do.
Hmm.
because I thought that that just meant, you know how we evangelicals are, we, you know, independent charismatics are, I'm not submitting myself to anybody because they're just going to take advantage of me and everybody's just on a power trip and that's the problem with the Catholic Church. These bishops tell everybody what to do, yada, yada, yada. Well, the truth of the matter is, you know, submitting yourself to authority is probably one of the most freeing things that you can do because you're not always on the spot to make that decision. You have other people that you can bounce things off of and people who can counsel you. And the word says there is wisdom in a multitude of counsel. So, you know, because we live in an upside-down kingdom anyway, it's obvious that when God tells us to do something, it's going to work exactly the opposite of the way it would work in the world. Sure, you submit yourself unconditionally to authority in the world, and there's some really bad things that could happen to you. But we live in a kingdom where if you're going to be first, you got to be willing to be last. If you're going to live, you got to die. If you're going to have anything, you got to be willing to give it all away. Well, that's not the world. And so when you submit yourself to godly people, the Holy Spirit uses those people as a buffer in your life to keep you from falling into the ditch. And the whole trick of this is to keep between the ditches.
Yeah, as a buffer in your life. You needed steel wool in your life, from what I understood.
Oh, so. Baby, I needed a grinding wheel.
Yeah, that would. You went from 2020, the Oprah Winfrey Show, Larry King Live, Focus on the Family, 700 Club, all the way to John Trott and Mike Hertenstein.
Yeah.
Interesting name, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought so.
Do you like those guys? Do you hate them? If you met them in the grocery store, you turn the cart around the corner, all of a sudden you meet these guys who wrote Selling Satan, The Tragic History of Mike Warnke. That, I mean, these guys stuck their nose into your business in such a huge way. They really, really ripped the rug out from underneath it. And from what I understand, some of it was probably well-deserved. But like every scenario, three sides to every story, they probably went a little too far with some stuff. So I can imagine, like I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, Mike, and going, man, how would I react if I turned the corner in the grocery store and we bumped carts?
Well, I think I think I'm cool with those guys. I haven't had that experience, so I don't know. But I think I'm cool because I really, well, two things. This is going to sound really weird, but first of all, I have to believe that they were doing what they thought was best for the church.
You really believe that pure motives?
Well, yeah. I believe that their motives were pure.
They weren't just trying to sell more copies of Cornerstone?
Well, I don't think so. I think they were really trying to do what they thought was the right thing. Now, you know, I have a problem with people who feel that their calling in the world is to make sure everybody is living up to their standards. And there are other people...
You just described the entire evangelical community in one foul swoop.
Yeah, foul swoop. But, you know, there's, Hank Hanegraaff.
Yeah.
Dave Hunt.
Yep.
A lot of these guys, I don't approve of their methods, but I got to believe somewhere in my heart that they're doing what they feel is the right thing to do, because the alternative is they're just mean-spirited people that are doing this, and I don't want to think that of any brother or sister in the body.
And do you not think that the body of Christ does need somewhat of a check and balance scenario out there? In other words, if we didn't have those folks, and I'm not impressed with the John MacArthur's of the world either, but if we didn't have the Watchdogs or the Trinity Foundation, the Ole Anthony's, the whatever, if we didn't have them, it'd be a little too kumbaya, and we'd be getting the wool pulled over eyes far more than we are these days.
Well, yeah, that's true, and I think that's where this submission to authority comes in. I think if we could get a good healthy grasp on the whole concept of submitting to authority,
yeah,
then you would have the built-in checks and balances that the Bible talks about.
But you didn't do that.
No, gosh, no. All I was surrounded by was bean counters, and all we were concerned with was what was good for the bottom line, to be honest with you.
And you were making a good buck from what I hear.
Yeah.
And you were spending a good buck from what I hear.
Yeah. And yeah, and see, we were looking at it as, well, this is an entertainment organization, and this is what entertainers do. Well, that's fine, but we were also a 501c3 tax exempt organization, and that wasn't what organizations like that were supposed to do. But because all we had around us were people that were, you know, kind of entertainment oriented, And because we didn't have any spiritual oversight, there was nobody to say, look, dude, you're getting off track here. And it's like you said a minute ago, you get to a point where you get so famous, you can justify any doggone thing.
Hmm.
And that's not good. You know, that is just not good. And the second thing is, I was talking about not being mad at those guys. I really think that what happened needed to happen. I really think that God was, you know, using all of that to get me out of the show business and get me back in the ministry where I belonged.
I really hope I'm not quoting Benny Hinn here, but I think the phrase would be Holy Ghost enema.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, I mean,
and if I'm
God,
quoting Benny Hinn, folks, please forgive me.
Yeah, please forgive him. He doesn't want to be doing that. He doesn't. I know him, and he doesn't really want to be doing that.
Stop. All right. Now, listen, how do you respond to this? I got to read a couple things. Because, look, you know what I've done? You have ruined my week, all right? I spent more time reading this week than I have my entire adult life.
I'm sorry, bro.
I read the, what's it called, the account of your getting your life back on track on your website. What's that document called?
It's just a review. It's the findings of the elders and all of that, yeah, where they're all at now. And
the
all
findings of the committee that were trying to get your head back, you know,
yes,
on your shoulders. Okay.
Those guys.
So I read all that stuff. I read how, you know, you had a good attitude about it. You're like, you know what? Even though there are some things I probably shouldn't need to go through, I'm willing to go through it because it's just the right move.
Yeah.
So you didn't whinge and justify. You were, it seemed like you were contrite. So that was good. Then I read the whole Cornerstone thing, and I read a bunch of other interesting websites. I phoned a couple of people I know in California, and man, I don't know how I feel about you.
You
know, no, seriously, like, part of me is like, do we trust this guy from now on? Because he really screwed up in such a huge way and seems like he has a storytelling con artist genetic thing in his blood. Or do we just go, good on him for wading through this and for submitting himself to some kind of authority and getting back on track? I don't know how to feel about you, Mike, because I don't know you. I mean, this is third-party stuff. Everything I find out about you is all third-party, and I'm smart enough to know that I shouldn't trust third-party stuff.
Well, I'd say that, you know, everybody's got to make up their own mind, and it doesn't matter what I do. There are some people who are not going to find it to be good enough. Like one of the things that people have often said as a negative toward my whole submission to authority was that the guys that I submitted to were all friends of mine. Well, that's not really true. I knew one of the guys fairly well, but the rest of them, two of the guys I'd only met on, one guy I had preached for once, one guy I had met after a concert up in Cincinnati once, and two of them I never met until the day that they walked in and sat down and I submitted to them without any kind of hesitation at all. So, and in the years that have passed, you know, we have expanded the number of people who sit in authority over this ministry from 5 to 7, and at this point in my life, I will have to say that I do have a good relationship with all these men. Because I have a relationship with them doesn't mean that they're going to be dishonest in my favor.
No. Yeah, I get that. And but what, so, what you do need to do, though, Mike, is you need to change the phone numbers on that document. Because I phoned about 10 phone numbers, and one of them actually came through to an answering machine on a church. The rest of them were, like, out of order, out of service. It was somebody else. Hey, you know, hey, is John there? No, there's no John lives here. You know what I mean? You got to change the numbers just so that people, if they want to bring your ministry to their church, they can go, I'm not sure. Sure, let me phone somebody.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I didn't know that was happening. I will make sure that all of the phone numbers get updated. Of course, you know, lives change, people move on,
yeah.
Numbers change, and then somehow that all gets overlooked when it comes to making changes on the web. Thank you, though. That's good. And
well,
I think if people really want to know where I'm at now, they ought to come hear me preach once. And if they don't, If it doesn't.
Well, but hold on. But everybody, I mean, most people don't have that much discernment to be able to sit down, hear someone preach, and go, yeah. Everyone wants to know what he's like when the microphone's off, when the cameras are off. What's he like behind the scenes? You know, is he as dodgy as he used to be? I mean, here's a quote from this Selling Satan: The Tragic History of Mike Warnke. I need your response to this, Mike. After our lengthy investigation into his background, we found discrepancies that raised serious doubts about the trustworthiness of his testimony. We have uncovered significant evidence contradicting his alleged satanic activity. His testimony contains major conflicts from book to book and tape to book. It contains significant internal problems, and it doesn't square with known external times and events. Further, we have documentation and eyewitness testimony that contradict the claims he has made about himself. Mm-hmm. When you hear that, what's your response?
My response is that, you know, we have addressed all of those things in the documents that we have on our website.
Yeah.
And I have apologized for any kind of exaggerations that I am guilty of in the process of trying to tell stories. And all of these things have been dealt with, and the elders have dealt with them, and they've put out their findings that there's plenty of evidence that I was in the occult, and they have read, you know, all of the testimony and everything that I've given them. But see, one of the things that the media wanted me to do is they wanted me to submit to them, and Matthew 18 tells me to submit to elders, but it doesn't tell me to submit to magazines.
No, yeah, okay.
So, you know, I did what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, good for
and
you.
And a group of ministers who are all in good standing have, you know, walked me through years and years and years of restoration, and I've never balked at doing that once. So, you know, I don't know. There are I don't really have an answer. They're just, you know, people are either going to take a look at what we've done, and that's going to be fine for them, or they're going to continue to have questions to the end of time, which, you know, in my opinion, I have already answered, and I have done everything necessary to put myself in good standing, and if that's not good enough for people, then it isn't.
Yeah, yeah. Folks, we're on the phone with the one and only Mike Warnke. Mike, were you really a Satan guy? Were you a high priest?
I was. Well, that is a generic term. They wouldn't have called me that, but yeah, I was. I was in charge of the liturgical part of it.
Were you responsible for 1,500 Satanists?
I was responsible for 1,500 people getting exposed to the occult and coming into different areas in their lives that they got involved in on their own. But yeah, we had a. That's the three cities in Southern California. That isn't that many people, especially not in the 60s.
When they were trying to get people to sort of corroborate your story, you know, they were getting people to kind of go, yeah, this is Mike. Yeah, what he says in his book is true. They couldn't find one of those 1,500 people?
Well, the truth of the matter is they found a lot of people like that, and I have a bunch of documentations from some of the people they talked to.
Yeah.
Saying that they never said those things to Mike or John. One of the people that they actually quoted in their article is a really dear friend of mine, and he wrote a letter to my elders saying, I never said any of the things that they're saying. My first wife was quoted in the articles, and she actually wrote a letter to the elders saying, I never said any of the things that they accused me of saying.
Really?
And, I lived through all of this with him, and he may be a lot of things, but he's not lying about this.
Really?
Really.
That was Lois?
No, that was Lois. I was never married.
Oh, that's right. No, you were just a fiancé there. The first wife was Sue, wasn't it?
Well, they say I was her fiancé. I gave her a little rose ring with a diamond chip in it. When we were dating.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever asking her to marry me.
No. Oh, man. The details. You must people get weighted down in all this. Like the Royal Order of the Lantern. What exactly was that?
It was a bunch of college kids. It was an entry-level thing that we did to get people interested in us as people so that we could get them involved in things that were a little bit more serious later on. There's a bunch of places for kids to get together, and we stole this lantern off the front of this house, and we put it in the middle of the coffee table, and we'd sit around and do drugs and drink, and, you know, and then we kind of watched those people and see who was so inclined, and then later on we talked to them about getting involved in more, you know, more interesting things, and, you know, it was all the 60s.
What's the Syro-Chaldean Church? Did I say that right?
Syro-Chaldean Church is...
Say it again for me so I can pronounce it.
Syro-Chaldean Church?
Syro-Chaldean.
They basically take their lineage from St. Thomas going to India. They'd be Thomites. You can look that up. I mean, Christianity Today just did a big article on them.
And they're the ones that made you the big kahuna there, or another high priest or something, or what?
Oh,
what was
I
it?
Wasn't. I wasn't a big kahuna. I was just. I just got involved.
Ordained. And, that's the word I was looking for.
Huh?
Were you ordained with them?
Yeah. But I've changed them. My ordination now is with the Communion of Convergence Churches, which is basically an offshoot of the Episcopal Church, and we're online. It's CCC USA.
How are you and Morris Cirillo? Are you guys tight or not? Or
no?
No. So there was a bit of a you do your thing, I'll do mine. Thank you very much.
There was a bit of you do your thing, and then I'll take it away from you and make it my thing.
Hold on. I'm sorry. You got to clear that one up for me. I missed that one.
Well, you know, it's just that I did a lot of stuff with Dr. Cirillo, and then when it came time for me to, actually become part of that ministry, I was, you know, basically told there was no place for me.
Right.
And, you know, that basically was probably a good thing. But it did kind of throw me, you know, in the deep end of the pool. I tell people all the time, one of the things that was characteristic of the Jesus movement is we had no mentoring. You know, we were just basically thrown in the deep end of the pool. We had testimonies. And, you know, one day we were standing around doing what we were doing. We got saved. And 2 weeks later, people wanted us to lead Bible studies and pastor churches. And you could have been in... you know, you could have been in seminary for 100 years and nobody wanted to hear anything you had to say, but if you killed your mother a week ago and got saved last night, everybody wanted you to be, you know, the next whatever it was.
Dude, here I am calling my guest dude again. I did this last week, too. Dudes.
I like dude.
That's so reminiscent of what I grew up in, and I got tired of kind of only hearing these glory stories. You know, I used to be an axe murderer, and then I became a Christian, and now I don't do it anymore because the people I rub shoulders with are still struggling with axe murdering.
I know.
If you know
and,
what
you know,
I mean.
It was all so surreal. And we got, I mean, I got carried away with it. I did. And I did a lot of wrong things.
But you never lied about the Satan stuff, though. But
my hair probably wasn't down to my butt. It was between my shoulder blades. My fingernails probably weren't 87 inches long. They were probably only like 4. You know,
did you have scabs
stories
on your face?
Huh?
Did you have scabs on your face?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From the crystal?
I sure did. My first wife Sue, her mom, who just passed away this year, and I've stayed friends with her all these years.
Good for you.
She used to tell these stories about how one time she was in San Bernardino and she walked right past me and she'd known me all my life and she didn't even recognize me. And you know, but everybody that does drugs has got that story. I mean, all you have to do is take a look at somebody that's doing meth and you can see their effects. I mean, that's not all that remarkable for that time.
No, not really. I mean, here's another quote. I'd had hepatitis 4 times from shooting up with dirty needles, scabs all over my face from shooting up crystal. I was a speed freak. I weighed 110 pounds, soaking wet. My skin had turned yellow. My hair was falling out. My teeth were rotting out of my head. I'd been pistol whipped 5 or 6 times. My jaw had been broken. My nose had been almost ripped off. I had a bullet hole in my right leg, 2 bullet holes in my left leg. Is that all true?
Yes.
See, Greg Gilbert says, no, that's not.
Well, why would Greg Gilbert know?
I don't know.
Greg Gilbert was a guy. I stayed in a room in his grandparents' house for about 2 weeks once.
Okay. Maybe I'm a little bit more kumbaya than I like to admit. But for the sake of good feelings and warm fuzzies, I would love for you guys to all sit in a room and just go over. You know. But I guess that goes back to, you know, you don't really have to. And digging up stuff is, you know, is that helpful for moving on and.
Well, here's the thing. We're going over stuff that happened, well...
20 years ago.
First of all, everybody is trying to remember something that happened 40 years ago.
I can't remember stuff from last week.
Now, and then everything was dealt with, you know, 15 or 16 years ago. And going over it anymore is, to my way of thinking, you know, sort of counterproductive. I am where I am now, doing what I'm doing now, and that's where I want to be. And... there's nothing I'm going to be able to say or do. It's going to change some of these guys' opinions of me. I've already said I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've been criticized for that because I didn't get into the gory details. But, you know, if I go into the gory details, everybody gets mad at me because they don't want to hear the gory details. So, you know, I've done what I feel like God has asked me to do, and that's either fine with everybody or it isn't, and God bless you.
Yeah.
You know?
I get it. I think of some of the dumb things. Well, you know what? Here's the deal, Mike. I really understand. This is going to sound a bit condescending, so my apologies for this, but I really do understand what you were kind of going through, because when I was living in California, I loved telling stories, and I remember people actually saying to me, and they said to each other behind my back, as I figured out later, there's no way he could have gone through that much stuff at that age.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying, yeah, I did. The Vietnam stuff is all true. The Satan stuff is all true. Everything is all true.
It's all true. Some of it may be exaggerated in the telling of the story or the writing of the book. And if you look on the front of the book, you see there are two other guys involved in the production of that thing. You know, there was me, there was Dave Balsiger, and there was Les Jones in Australia. There was a company that did all the copy editing and made sure that it was a book that was going to sell lots of copies. So there's a lot of dynamics that went into that book besides me telling my story, my way.
Is June 29th, is that still Mike Warnke Day in Tennessee?
I don't know. I don't know if they do that all the time or if it's just, I mean, I've still got the proclamation, but I don't know.
Man. You know what? I'm so sorry. I really am so sorry that you had to go through all this. We are pretty stupid people, and God allows it. God gives us a lot of rope.
Well, you know, I think it was necessary for me to go through, though. I mean, you know, I keep getting back to the place where I don't think if this had happened, I don't think if this had not happened, that I would be where I am today. I don't think that I would have ever submitted myself to authority. I don't think I'd have ever gotten back into the ministry and got out of show business, which I desperately needed to do because it was killing me in more ways than one. I don't think that I would have ever taken a look at my life and come to grips with some of the things I was doing wrong. I don't think I would have ever been pushed out of that place where I felt like, you know, the rules didn't apply to me because I was Mike Warnke, so I was special. You know, I don't think I would have ever gone to counseling and, you know, taking care of some of the things in my life that were, you know, basically hindering me from having a decent relationship with a woman.
Yeah, that really, that's a tough journey in and of itself. I mean, four marriages is a tough thing for most people to swallow.
And see, that's true. That of all the things they said, that's true. That's true.
Well,
and I cannot tell you how sorry I am that I failed that many times. And I can't tell you how many times I've had to apologize to my kids for that.
Tell us about your kids, Mike. I'd love to know about them. How many do you have?
Well, I have a girl named Renee who is a child that I kind of help raise after her parents went through some stuff. Her name is Renee Maldonado, so she counts. And then I have three adopted daughters. I have two stepdaughters, and then I have my own two sons. So there's a total of eight.
Wow. Wow. You know, I've said that, I just said this last week on the show, Mike. I often wonder, I walk around the house going, man, how am I screwing up my kids today? Do you ever shudder when you think back of this stupid mindset and stuff? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm 61. I'll be 61 next month.
Congratulations.
And at my age, I can look back and see how stupid I was at 31. and 41. And 51. No, 51, I've gotten a handle on things. But you know, there was 30 years there, you know, of just, I don't know, man, just being completely out of control, completely taken with myself, completely, you know, I can do anything I want to, and all I got to do is throw money at the people in my life, and that should be enough. And, I mean, the litany goes on and on and on and on. You know, as far as being a screw-up, I am, and I have no defense for that. But the thing about it is, Lord's always used screw-ups.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I have taken the steps that I feel that I need to take to make sure that I don't make those same mistakes again. That doesn't mean that that's going to preclude me from making any mistakes again ever. But, you know, I'm just kind of soldiering on the best way I know how.
Did you hang out much with Keith Green or Larry Norman, Randy Stonehill, you know, those guys from back in the day?
I know Larry not well. I know Stonehill a lot better, and I knew Keith really well. And the thing about it is, if I had listened to what Keith was saying to me, I would have never gotten into any of this.
Really?
I would have never had the problems I've had if I had just listened to Keith.
What was he saying to you?
Keith was saying, look, we don't need to be involved in this commercialization of the gospel. We don't need to be involved in all this big-time Charlie stuff. You need to pay attention to your family. You need to pay attention to your marriage. You know, you can't keep using I'm out here saving the world as an excuse for what you're doing. You're not all that in a bag of chips. He and Winky Pratney and Barry McGuire all tried to talk to me. But I was so enamored with myself that I just, you know, went right ahead on. You guys just don't understand. And I remember one time saying to Keith, look, you can tell me what God's telling you, but don't try and tell me what God's telling me, because you don't have that authority in my life. Well, he was a brother, and we're supposed to submit to each other in love, and he was right, and he was only trying to help me. And if I just listened to him, I don't think I would have had... I don't think I'd had near the trouble that I had, but I didn't. I didn't listen. I didn't listen to anybody. It wasn't like people didn't try and tell me, but I just wouldn't submit. You know, that's the thing. Hmm. We get this independent, rebellious nature in the West, you know. It's about me.
Actually, you do. You really do.
Yeah. And we don't understand, you know, that the early church was all about community. It wasn't about me. It was about us. And we don't think in terms of us. We think in terms of me. I make these decisions. God's talking to me. God's leading me. This is my ministry. And you get out there into that, and you get what we call in Texas a good old-fashioned butt-whooping.
Yeah.
And you got nobody to blame but yourself. See, that's why I can't really be mad at John and Mike. Because, you know, I brought this on myself. Okay, maybe they didn't do the right thing. Maybe they didn't handle it the way I would have, or maybe the way Dr. Graham or somebody else would have handled it if they'd have been the ones. But the truth is, I mean, my actions painted a great big target right on the middle of my head. I mean, the Bible says, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High abideth under the shadow of the Almighty. Well, my opinion is, the secret place of the Most High is God's will for your life. And when you're in God's perfect will for your life, then you abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And no evil can come nigh thy dwelling, etc., etc. Well, take yourself out from under that shadow, and you expose yourself to all sorts of things. And I was not doing God's will. I was doing my own will and expecting God to bless it. And there's a problem with that, see.
You know what? You and I, boy, we could chat, eh? Holy jumping.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at the time here going, where did that go? Mike, one last little kind of persnickety thing. See, I'm using the word, what was the first word? Kerfuffle and persnickety. There's a couple of real macho words you don't want to really use inside of various gangs.
Do you wear pink at all?
The only other word I'm going to throw out is whoopsie-daisies, okay?
Oh, well.
Here's a little quote. If Mike led in acts of rape and other violent crimes, why, after his conversion, didn't he turn himself in the police in apprehending his old satanic friends? If, on the other hand, his rape and abuse stories are not true, what does this say about the imagination of the author? Do you understand that point?
Yeah. I mean, that's the same point you'd have to make with anybody that had one of those kind of testimonies in that day.
Yeah.
Nobody was running to the police department. We were just getting saved and going on.
No, but afterward, like, have you ever, you know, sometimes I get woken up in the middle of the night. God obviously does not know my schedule real well, because he tends to kind of communicate while I'm sleeping. You know what I mean? And sometimes he convicts me of stuff.
Well, I get convicted of stuff, and I've sought out a lot of people that I hurt, and I've apologized.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine you have. But what about the whole turning yourself in thing? Would you ever consider doing that? I mean, you did some bad illegal stuff.
Oh, yeah, I did bad illegal stuff. But what I'm saying is, during the Jesus movement, people were getting saved who did bad illegal stuff, and I'm not the only one that didn't turn themselves in. Maybe I should have, but I didn't.
Now, I think I just heard you say, nobody was doing it, so why should I?
No. I was just saying that was not the thought process then.
Right, okay.
The thought process is, I'm saved now.
Yeah.
I need to get into this. I need to learn how to live the right kind of life. I need to go back and make reparations to people that I hurt. But nobody was saying, go turn yourself into the cops.
Yeah.
You know, drug dealers are getting saved. Nobody was saying to them, okay, now that you've become a Christian and you used to sell drugs, go turn yourself into the cops.
But from your journey from that time till now, I'm sure, you must have thought that through and gone, maybe I should just walk in and to the cop shop and go, look, 25, 30 years ago, I did this. I feel bad about it. There needs to be justice. Bust me. Never thought that way?
No, okay. I never have, I have to say. I never have. I don't know if that's wrong of me or not, but what I've felt like doing, what I felt like I need to do, and in the cases that I could, is go to the people where I affected their lives negatively and ask them to forgive me. And, I basically, never thought of that.
I appreciate you shooting straight with us. I'm so sorry that...
But how can you be sure that I'm shooting straight with you?
Well, you know what...
That's what you said. What you said a minute ago was that, that people can't... That people can't really trust me because they're never going to be able to know whether I'm telling them the truth or not.
But, Mike, in this interview, you have owned some things that I wasn't sure whether you were going to own. And in my opinion, that's shooting straight. Other stuff, I'm still not sure on. But the stuff that you've owned, I love it when we can own stuff. And good for you for doing that, man.
Oh, good. Well, cool. And also, I also think that Christians, I take that back. You said that you didn't think that most of the body of Christ had enough the discernment to realize whether a guy was on the level or not. And I was going to say that I didn't really agree with that. But the truth is, I do.
Yeah.
So okay. So you were right.
I hate when that happens, Glenn.
I do too.
I
don't mind when I'm right.
Just when I'm right, that gets
to
you.
Yeah, I don't like it when you're right.
That thing in the expose or the book or whatever it was, Glenn Kaiser wrote at the end. Was that the Glenn Kaiser from Rez Band?
Yeah.
So are you and him okay these days? Because he kind of put a little article in that book.
Glenn Kaiser is the leader of Jesus People USA.
Yep.
And Cornerstone Magazine is a vehicle of Jesus People USA. Glenn Kaiser basically gave John Trott and Mike Hertenstein the okay to do what they did.
Okay. So you're saying that Glenn was kind of behind all this?
Yes. Well, I'm not saying he's behind it. He's the leader of the group that did it.
Yeah.
So he had to prove of it. And I know that Nancy talked to Glenn and Wendy and said, "Why'd you do this?" And their answer was, "We're trying to help Mike." Okay, well, so if that's how he feels, then I'm willing to accept that.
Okay.
So, and, yeah, I mean, I'm okay. I haven't seen him in years, but as far as I'm concerned, I feel about this like I feel about the rest of it. It's behind me, and I'm trying to get on with my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, folks, there's lots of information on the website, of course, MikeWarnke.org. I appreciate your time. I know you must get sick of these kind of drudging through the same old stuff interviews, but it really is important for us, and thank you for allowing yourself to come under the microscope one more time. I appreciate that, man.
Well, it's okay, man. I appreciate that, and I have a lot of heart for Canada and for people in Canada, and, I trust in your integrity. So, and it's like everything else. I believe that you're asking the questions you're asking from a sincere heart.
It is. It really is. This is not sensationalistic. This is instead of hearing, all these years I've heard third party information about Mike Warnke, I want to ask Mike Warnke about Mike Warnke.
Yeah.
Is that fair enough?
Yeah. And I don't have any problem with that.
All right, man.
But.
Yep.
Mostly, my answer to people these days when it comes to the controversy is just check my website. Those are the answers, and call those people. I'm sorry to hear that you had trouble getting through.
Yeah.
We'll check those numbers.
But please do.
If you have any further questions, talk to those guys, because for me, it's done.
Yeah. Mike Warnke, the one and only on The Drew Marshall Show. Thanks, man, and I don't say this because it gets a little overdone sometimes, but may God bless you, really.
Thanks, buddy.
Take care.
I appreciate you. God bless yourself.
Take care, man.
Bye.
Mike Warnke. Boy, what a story, huh? What a journey. Well, I guess we'll find out all the real truth after the trumpets blow. That's supposed to be the deal anyway. What's your reaction to that interview with Mike Warnke, folks? 905-338-1250. Many of you will remember Mike's amazing testimony and ministry from back in the day. Therefore, many of you were shocked and felt betrayed by Mike during his public expose. So give us a call right now, 905-338-1250. Give us a call with your opinion of that interview we just did with Mike Warnke. Do you believe him? Should he be encouraged to move on and continue in ministry? Or are you still kind of suspicious? I mean, how should the Christian community respond to Mike Warnke today? I think it pertains to a lot of folks out there in ministry who have sort of fallen and been busted. And, you know, whether it be Mike Warnke or Jimmy Swaggart or Ted Haggard or... 905-338-1250. We'll take your calls on the Mike Warnke interview right now. We'll be right back.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.